Greetings, fellow investigators, and welcome back to our video podcast, Into the Darkness, where my friends and I play the Call of Cthulhu role-playing game. I'm your host, Tom Rayleigh. Our campaign is Horror on the Orient Express, and this is episode 61. I'm your game master, and Jeff Wilkins will be giving our recap. The investigators are still in Orishach, Serbia. The players are ready. Let's begin our journey into the darkness. Jeff?
Thanks, Tom. It's February, Monday, the 12th, 1923. Our investigators are in a small town called Orsach, outside of Belgrade. Dr. Dawkins and Frank are going to be staying at Father Vladim's house with his wife, Anna, while Rupert, Dr. Keith, and Eldridge are staying at the mayor's home. It's later in the afternoon. Frank and Dr. Dawkins are chatting with Father Vladim and his wife, just getting to know one another. We learn that Father Vladim is friends with Todorovich at the art museum. Vladim also goes on to tell us that the area that they live in is ripe with Roman artifacts, and that oftentimes there's a woman who lives out alone in the woods who has a real knack for finding these statues and artifacts. They refer to her as grandmother as a term of endearment. We are also informed that later on in the evening, there will be a traditional festival in the town to celebrate the arrival of spring. It will most likely be run by a group of gypsies who will be setting up a temporary camp. It's clear that his wife Anna is not happy about the celebration, as she feels its pagan roots are against God's wishes, whereas Father Vladim sees no harm in celebrating a local tradition. Back at Todor's house, which is the mayor, the other three are getting to know his family, which is very large. Todor invites us all to attend the celebration. Dr. Keith happens to notice a small token on the windowsill that are small clay figurines, a bit crude, almost like they were toys for a child. She also spots something else unusual, what looks like a small ocarina or a clay whistle. Dr. Keith is able to take it at the urging of Todor's wife, because the children constantly use the whistle to make noises. The topic of the old woman, or grandmother, comes up, and Todor is kind enough to draw us a map on how to get to her home. The night comes, and the celebration starts. They choose the youngest girl and dress her up in a nice skirt and a cape, and they also cover her face, arms, and hands in mud. The celebration consists of them taking the girl out from house to house, where the homeowners use a large ladle and pour water over her. While Dr. Dawkins shows concern for the little girl's health, the crowd assures him that all is well and that she will be given cookies and tea afterwards to warm her up. There was one young woman who stood out from the rest, as she was rather sad and distant from the festivities. We later learn that her twin sister was lost out in the woods when they were around 12 years old. The festival ends late into the night, and after a brief meeting with one another, we all split up to spend our night in our respective homes. Dr. Dawkins and Frank are tired, so they go to bed soon after arriving at the priest's house. In the middle of the night, Dr. Dawkins is awoken by the sound of voices. He's unable to hear any specific words, as it seems to be coming from the other side of the house. He decides to get up to investigate. Unfortunately, he hits a squeaky part in the stairs, and as soon as that happens, the voices stop. Soon after, Anna is startled by Dr. Dawkins in the middle of the night. She's holding a cup of tea and offers Dr. Dawkins some tea. He accepts, but he's uncomfortable and so quickly retires for the evening. The next morning, we're fed some night breakfasts. We are warned about the dangers of the woods. Some of the townspeople think the grandmother's a bit crazy for living out there all alone, so far away from the town. Dr. Keith, during her morning smoke, starts to look at the whistle and decides to test it out by blowing into it. Nothing happens, except one of the little girls comes rushing around at the sound, and she says, "Blow it louder." And that brings us up to date.
So, since you just watched the episode, does it actually end with him him still sitting on the porch?
Not exactly, because he doesn't speak the language. So he had to take what she said, went to Aldridge and got it
briefly translated.
So
it's still fairly early in the morning. You guys have eaten. What are your plans?
I'm going to blow the ocarina.
Weren't we planning to go to the grandmother?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I could do that on the way.
Just blow it the whole way there.
Yeah, just, I mean, not like super loud, but just like a little bit louder than I blew it before.
Okay. All right.
And then maybe a little louder still, you know, just in case it does any. I don't think it's going to do anything. I mean, it's just a kid's toy, but I'll give it a pop.
Before you leave, Anna, the priest's wife, she's made you kind of a basket to take with you for snacks. Tells you that it's probably going to take you probably a good 2 hours to walk through the woods. There's once you get Todor Nedic tells you that once you get to the edge of fields, there are no paths going in that direction. But if you just keep going in the same direction, you can't miss it because it's in a big clearing in the woods. So get your bearings, and then you just keep going in a straight line.
So we're taking a basket of goodies into the deep, dark wood to grandmother's house, and no one else is remotely anxious about this.
I didn't think of it until you said it just now.
Dr. Keith, are you wearing like a cape with like maybe a little hood or something?
To the woods, to grandma's house.
I'm wearing an Inverness cape, probably. So, yes.
As long as there's no chickens, we should be fine.
I stare at Dawkins and adjust my glasses, and I say the chicken had it coming.
All right. So with well wishes and. The priest, Father Filipovich, also tells you, you know, if you bring your money, because she's going to be tricky to negotiate with. That's how she makes her money. But if anybody can find this thing that you're looking for, she probably can.
Is there anything he can recommend that she might be interested in? Like, other than money? Like, living so far away from town, like, could we bring, like, fresh eggs or a bottle of wine or something to schmooze her with?
I don't know. Maybe that would work. Maybe that's a good idea. Bring her a gift.
Some baked children.
They could put it in your basket, and you could carry the basket with goodies for grandma.
Tom, if I remember my reading correctly, I could be very wrong. Isn't it polite in the Slavic communities to bring something to a guest house?
Bringing gifts is always polite.
Yeah. I can't remember what food it was, what drink, but I think it was wine. I don't know. I can't remember. But it was something that if you are an unexpected guest, you bring something like a tithe to kind of smooth things over. Okay. So bringing gifts is definitely something that I think we should do.
Now, you weren't here last week, but pretty much you're instrumental to all of them because you're the one doing all the translating.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, no worries. I'm here this week, so I will be the universal translator. I'll be the babblefish for everybody this episode.
All right. So is there anything you want to do before you set off this morning?
I guess I'll see if there's like a mead or a wine that the town can provide.
Okay.
That I can buy, and then I can present it to the grandmother who lives in the woods as a kind of tithe.
Not a problem.
Okay. Okay. And I guess that's it, other than what's already in my inventory.
Okay.
We're bringing the arm piece with us, right?
Yeah, I have it with me.
So is it our intent? Are we under the assumption that she has the missing piece and we're supposed to buy it from her? Is that what I'm getting out of this?
I think the understanding is that she might have something like it, yeah, or know where to find it. Or if anyone would know where to find something like that, it would be her.
Because I personally am not interested in buying any more statuary pieces.
I mean, what I don't understand, though, is if she's an old lady who lives out in the middle of nowhere, then where, how has she got all these contacts where she's getting all this stuff?
Father Filipovich says, so she's been a collector since she was a young girl, apparently. And she, as I say, there are ruins and places out here in the woods that have been long since lost to, modern civilization. They're from hangovers from the Roman and the Byzantine times. And she explores and finds them. She's found some amazing pieces.
A woman after my own heart, by the sound of it.
Some of them in incredibly good condition. Okay, so we'll assume that you set off. And
we'll let Rupert set the pace because he's got a gammy leg.
Okay.
So we'll go at Rupert's pace.
For the first 10 minutes, you're walking through the village and then to the end of the village, and you start walking through fields. You're heading west, by the way. Twenty-five minutes or so into your journey, and you reach the edge of the last field before the woods in that direction. And the woods at this point are not particularly thick. There's snow on the ground, and they're quite lovely. It's a beautiful forest. But there's always been sort of a natural fear of the deep woods in the Slavic areas. So you are at this moment entering the woods. So you walk on, and after about an hour, I would like you to do a listen roll.
I left my dice in the living room. I'll be right back. I'll grab it.
Okay.
BRB.
I believe I didn't pass that.
No.
Regular pass for me.
Okay.
I missed it by 4.
That's because of that bloody whistle.
Oh, I forgot about the whistle. You said you were going to.
Oh, yes. I'm just sort of, mucking about with it as I'm walking.
Well, I suppose you guys have been idly chit-chatting as you've been walking along, so you just now remember the whistle. But we'll wait for Mr. McKeon.
I have a quick question. Did Dr. Yeah. Dawkins share his story with his rendezvous in the middle of the night with the
I would have. Yeah, okay. I mean, we're chatting. I'll let you guys know.
Okay. Seems odd. Did we have a sense of what time that was? Was it like middle of the night, or was it?
Yeah, it was. Wasn't it like around 2?
It was around 2 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. And you're not sure if you just naturally woke up, or if the sound actually woke you up, but it's the first thing you noticed.
How was her actions in the morning? Did she seem kind of normal again after the festivity?
She was completely sweet and normal and fixing you breakfast. And as you recall, she was a bit icy towards you the night before because of the whole thing that went on with the gypsies. Okay, Tom, go ahead and do a listen.
Oh, you guys want me to do my listen now? Here we go. 34. That is a... Is it a pass? It's a pass!
Okay. You've noticed, it's not so much that you've heard something. It's that just that as you've walked on into the woods, you've all sort of moved into an awareness that just about the only sound that you're making is the soft sort of crunch of your feet in the pine needles. And the trees are rather lush, and it just, there's sort of a deadening sound, you know, that sort of feeling like you're in a closed room. And perhaps that's what prompts Elizabeth to pull out her ocarina and her whistle and try it.
Very bad.
Of course, nothing really happens. You notice something though. The sound of the ocarina, it's odd. It's almost producing a kind of discordant harmony, one that doesn't it doesn't sound like it's on a musical scale that we would be used to. Perhaps a Byzantine musical scale, which their scale's a little different than the modern scale. You also sort of perceive that the whistle itself vibrates the harder you blow it. You actually get the impression that if you actually blew it really, really hard, it would shatter. It's that delicate.
All right, okay.
I'd like you to all do a spot hidden roll as well.
And no, 92.
I got a 14.
I got an O and then 6.
And Rupert all got I see a 93. Is
I know. I'm showing Nick that we have the same dice. Look. That was the elder sign. Yeah, we have the same dice.
Those of you who passed, it might be your imagination, but when Elizabeth blew a little harder on the whistle, did the trees shake a little bit? The leaves? Was it just the wind? You're not sure, but it certainly seemed to time itself perfectly to the whistle blowing.
Mm-hmm. Well, the little girl did say that it wards evil spirits away or something, didn't she?
Mm-hmm. You can do an intelligence roll as well.
Oh, 6.
An 04.
Scientifically, maybe it's some sort of an acoustic thing, that the sound that it's making is just the right vibration to make something nearby vibrate also a little bit.
Makes sense.
Yes, like that German chap with his compressed air whistle thing.
Or like if you play a guitar next to a piano, the piano will actually resonate the notes that you hit.
Always trying to bring science into the world of the occult. You doctors.
Why not?
Oh, well, no, that German chap, he apparently, I mean, I don't know how true this is, but it was in the paper some time ago. But apparently after the Great War, the Germans started working on sound weapons, and apparently he had this thing, like a great big whistle the size of a post box, and they attached a compressed air cylinder to it, and turned it on once, and it turned his assistant's insides into a substance not dissimilar to blancmange. Mm. So, you know, extraordinary stuff, sound.
I look to the group with this kind of, like, disheartened, a little uncomfortable look, and I look at the algorithm and up to Dr. Keith and say, let's just keep going.
It was in the Times.
And I'm going to keep walking down the trail.
If anyone could understand the concept of sound being dangerous, it's Eldridge.
Yeah. So let's just keep moving.
Right. After an hour's time, can you at least come up with a knowable...
Sorry.
No.
Well, I'm not going to play it anymore, but I'm just going to sort of, you know, study it a little bit. And work out how I could play one of my favorite Jack Buchanan tunes on it. Need a rise.
The more you look at it, the more you're convinced it might be Byzantine. You know, there's a certain area of art and that it might actually fall into. And it would be very early Byzantine, late Roman, early Byzantine.
There's nothing inscribed on it or anything?
No, no. It's one of those sort of whimsical things that has a human face on it that somebody thought was a cute idea, and then it just looks kind of creepy. All right, so as you walk along, another 20 or so minutes. The woods get pretty thick. You also start to notice something else. You notice that there's very little snow here, as if maybe the canopy above has sort of blocked the complete snowfall. It's darker. It's more lush. The trees are bigger. You see more green. From the pine needles and other things. And you start to notice more a lot of wetness, a lot of dripping from the trees. There's whole areas now where the snow is completely gone, and it almost looks like springtime has arrived in this area. You notice mushrooms and toadstools and brackens and things like that growing up out of the ground, and there's a sort of lush humus sort of smell, and as you press on, it becomes very difficult, especially for Rupert, because the trees are overgrown, they're thick, they're rooty, there's rooted knots all over the place, and also, do another listen roll. We can all do it.
That one I made.
I failed it.
Made it. 32.
Okay.
And Rupert failed it as well.
So, who made it?
I made it.
I got an 09.
As you're walking forward, you can see up ahead, a ways up ahead, that it's lighter up there. But where you are right now, you almost feel like there's a humming sound in the air. It's when you try to concentrate on it to hear it, it's not there. But when you are distracted and you're you're just trying to get over the roots and trying to get past the trees. I swear there's something buzzing in your ear, some low, deep sort of hum sound as you're going along. And just about the time that you've convinced yourself that there's nothing there, just about the time the smell of the mushrooms and the humus and the wet dripping trees starts to almost overpower you, a new smell sort of comes wafting in to you, and it smells like freshly baked bread. It smells wonderful. And as this is happening, you're breaking out of the trees, out of the forest, and there is a large field, surprisingly green, and looks like it has been freshly tilled and probably just freshly planted with new seed. And up ahead of you, on the other side of the field, you can see a hut. Looks like, you know, I mean, it's not just like a one-person hut. It's more like a small house, one-story high, old-style thatched roof. And you can smell the bread coming from it. It's still about, maybe 300 feet away from you. You can see that there's a little fence going around the property, around the house. Looks like it's made out of pieces of wood, not like a picket fence, but like literally branches that have been stuck in the ground and wired together with something like briar wood or something like that. There's a little gate. And there's flowers blooming, and there's a creeper growing up onto the tree, I mean up onto the house, and everything here seems just incredibly lush and green and growing and very pretty, and the house does not look like it's all made out of gingerbread or anything like that. So you guys are still 300 feet away. What would you like to do? I say that. I know what you're doing, but.
I'm just a little concerned that we startle her. I wonder if we should.
Well, I was going to say that Eldritch should lead the way. First of all, he speaks the language, and he knows the customs better than we do, so.
I nod, and I'm going to trudge through the snow up to the front door.
There's no snow.
Was there snow?
No, nothing here. No snow here.
Not ominous, right? Is the grass nice and green, or is it?
Well, it looks like things are, like I said, it's like springtime, and they've just done some planting, so there's not really any grass. But there are plants growing, and there's flowers blooming. I should also mention, I didn't quite say this, you've been kind of going uphill all this way. So maybe the climate is a little bit different here because you've been going up higher. It hasn't been steep. It's just been consistently heading upward.
Okay. Well, I will approach the door and I'm going to turn to the group and just kind of hold out my hand and say, we don't want to swarm the door. Keep your distance. Stay in the yard until I know that everything's all right.
Okay. As you start to approach the house, maybe you're 20 feet away from it as you're walking towards it, you can hear somebody inside humming.
Okay.
Sounds like a woman humming.
I will approach the front door, and I guess it's like oak, and I'm gonna kind of knock on the door. I'm gonna rap on the door.
And you hear a woman's voice, and she says, "Come in."
And she says this in.
She says it in Serbo-Croatian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I turn to the group, And I just hold my hand out. I'm going to open the door. And in... Tell me what would be better, Russian or German? This far east.
I don't know.
I'll say Russian. Russian,
Russian probably, yeah.
I say in Russian, hello, ma'am.
And do you open the door?
Yeah, I open it up a crack.
All right. When you open it up, it's you can see that it's a fairly decent-sized room. There's a fire going in the fireplace. There are shelves all over the place with pieces of bits and pieces of statuary and stuff like that. And there is a young woman. She looks like she's maybe 19, 20 years old. Sitting at a loom, and she's weaving a tapestry. When she looks up, she's the one who's humming the tune, and you get the bread smell from baking bread. She says, "Oh, guests, please come in." She's saying this, of course, and once you say something in Russian, she switches to Russian.
I open the door fully, but I remain outside on the porch, or I guess on the step. I remove from my pack I guess it was mead that I picked up in the town, something like that. I'm gonna hold it out, and I'm going to say, and I'm gonna kind of bow my head because it's I don't know because she's looming, so and looming. Making blankets is usually like something a matriarch does. So I'm going to bow my head out of respect, look to the ground. And I'm going to say, please accept our gift before we enter. There are five of us currently. My compatriots are standing outside of your yard. They don't speak Russian or Serbo-Croatian or Czechoslovakian or anything like that.
She's like, oh, please have them come inside. I'll put some tea on. Just let me finish these couple of
stitches.
Lines. Yeah.
I look up at her, and with the crook of my eyebrow, and with a curious tone of my voice, I say, "We were expecting an older woman."
Oh, grandmother. She's not here right now, but she'll be here soon.
Do you mind telling us where she is?
What is she doing? Probably out in the woods looking for things.
And what is your name?
My name is Tsertsa.
Tsertsa, where is everyone else? Do you live here alone?
Just me and your grandmother. Yes.
No. Where is your parents?
Oh, my parents, they died a long time ago.
Hello. Brothers or sisters?
No brothers or sisters.
I give a twitch of a smile. And I say, let me go speak to my partners, and we'll come inside post haste. And I kind of tuck the meat into my jacket, and I walk over. And I say, there's a young woman sitting at the loom. She's about 20, 21, I imagine. Her name is Tsertsa, and my gut is telling me something odd is happening.
Something odd? I'm surprised at how friendly she is. Just to welcome in a bunch of strangers like that?
That's partially it, but at the same time, two things stand out in my mind. The first is that I don't think any of us heard about there being a second person living there, just the grandmother.
I think it was mentioned because I asked something about how does she get food or how does she... And somebody, I think, did mention there was another younger woman.
Okay. But the main thing that the main curious thing, I guess there's two curious things. Number one, do we know how old this woman is?
Grandma?
Yeah.
Father Filipovich said probably in her 80s.
Why is she, if she's in her 80s, why is she roaming around the woods?
They also said that she's a tough old broad.
Yeah. But then there's the fact that that she is looming. Now, this is far stretched. This is just the Eldritch paranoid brain. But usually, the matriarch, the mother or the grandmother looms. But other than that, it seems very welcoming inside. So if we'd like to wait for the matriarch to come home for us to enter, because usually we need to ask her permission, not some young girl's permission. Or we can go inside now. It's up to you.
I won't go in unless Dr. Keith goes in.
Well, Dr. Keith, Dr. Dawkins.
Well, I'm following your lead. I mean, if this is the customs, I don't want to offend. So I'm following your lead.
Right. And what about you, Dr. Keith?
Well, I would, despite the fact that my childhood has prepared me to, with an absolute sense of dread for exactly this situation, I'll go in then. If you're all intent on going in, now, I will also go in. But I'm sticking near the door in case she tries to eat us.
Well, I don't think that she's going to eat us, but...
Probably not, but you can't be too careful.
At the chance of offending the grandmother, we may want to stay outside. We're here to ask her questions and ask for her help. Well,
would it be offensive if we don't go in, if we don't take this young lady's offer?
It may be offensive to the young lady, but we're not here for the young lady, we're here for the grandmother. We could still go inside. We just may need to prepare. The grandmother may not be as friendly as the young woman inside. Sert says she's 20, 21. She may just be happy that there's company. Her grandmother may not be as welcoming to strangers.
Maybe not. I mean, we are out here, and she does go out looking for artifacts. She might not be offended by us going in, especially if we're buyers.
And I nod, I say, well, I think that we're going inside. And I kind of wave to the group and I say, follow me and we'll head inside. Dr. Keith, if you'd like to stand by the door, just in case we need to make a ready escape.
I shall stand here and so that I can welcome the old lady if she returns.
That's also smart. See, a woman meeting with another woman first may help. But let's head inside.
Right. By now, she's no longer at the loom. She's put the kettle on. There's kind of a, I don't know how to say it, it's almost like a big pot belly fireplace. Cool. Obviously, it can be used for baking bread and other things like that. She's put the kettle there. You can see that she's also been baking bread. So she's pulling bread out of the oven, even as you speak, as I speak. And she wants to make sure that you're all comfortable, that Grandma will be here soon. They haven't had guests for a long time, but it's not unusual that people come. She says, yeah, if you come all this way, you must be looking for something important. And she'll be here soon. So she offers you some bread. She offers you tea or coffee, whatever you want. And she goes back down and sits at her loom. And speak, and she doesn't loom anymore, but she's, that's her seat, so she's sitting there.
So what does it look like she's making?
Some sort of a tapestry. Did you want to look closer at it?
Yeah.
It looks like she's doing a kind of a primitive of like the town of Orishach. It's, I don't know how to describe it exactly. It's sort of iconographic where the buildings are not, nothing is really realistic. If you've ever seen anything like by Winsaki, is that his name? Everything is kind of flat and symbolized and all of that. But it's just a very complex tapestry.
Okay.
The little people in it all have colorful costumes on, and it's very bright and colorful.
Interesting.
So she sits there and smiles. And where have you come from? I mean, where? Obviously, you didn't come from Orishach, but where did you come from originally?
We're travelers from Miskatonic University. I think that's the line that we gave. we're travelers from Miskatonic University. Dr. Dawkins, and I point to Dr. Dawkins, and Dr. Elizabeth, we're currently doing a study on the historical relevance of the area. Mr. Coates here, he's a photographer. I'm simply their ghostwriter and, of course, translator.
Let me give you some additional, as you're looking around, there are literally hundreds of pieces of statues and artifacts and things like that on shelves all the way around. They go right up into the rafters of the ceiling and practically right up into the thatched roof. They're stacked up. They're just piles and piles of them. And you see a few pieces that might look, you know, like arms that are the right size and length or shape. There's lots of them. There's also a little table to the side where there's a few pieces that obviously she was cleaning. She was removing the dirt and the grime from them. But Dr. Elizabeth, you're especially like, wow.
Did I miss it? Did she introduce herself as the daughter or granddaughter of the...
Or did she just yes, notice? She... Well, yes, she said granddaughter.
Granddaughter, okay.
Well, she calls her grandma. Of course, everybody calls her grandma.
Everybody does. So. That's what I was like...
Can we take a closer look at the statuary, the pieces?
Sure. She says, now I don't know as much as grandmother because she went to university. I never went to university. There are shelves all the way up, so you can see the stuff that's more or less at eye level, but there's a lot of stuff that could be on shelves even higher up. You'd literally have to climb up on a chair and up onto a cabinet to get to the stuff that's the highest stuff up there. I assume you're not doing that at the moment.
No, but you know, the pieces that we had some, if I'm not mistaken, they had some sort of like circular type of carving on it, right?
I don't.
It kind of resembled like muscle tissue, in a way. If I'm not mistaken.
I think it was pictures almost, not necessarily carving, but like little
purple. Something like that. But yeah. There were markings on it. So okay. I'm going to actively look for something like that.
Okay.
I'm going to continue with my conversation. Oh, just kidding. Go ahead, Tom.
Well, I was just going to say, did you guys want to ask her anything? She's just sitting there humming her little tune, waiting for the next batch of bread to come out.
Yeah, we're currently looking into something from a very early period in the Byzantine Empire, in the Roman Empire. Supposedly, it's part of a much larger structure. It's part of a statuette.
Oh.
We're hoping that your grandmother or you could possibly point us in the correct direction. It should be in this particular region. It should be an arm.
There's lots of arms. She doesn't look like she really understands everything of what you're saying because she's just the obviously she's the one who cooks and cleans.
Yeah, she's just the helper. Right. I say, is it possible for us to look around until your grandmother arrives, and then we could possibly ask her some more in-depth questions?
Absolutely. Yes. Sure.
Okay, so we've come quite a distance, and we don't know how long we're going to be staying in Orishash, but.
Well, she sort of apologizes. She says, you know, I keep the place as neat as I can. However, Grandma doesn't want me always touching these things. So I'm afraid she's not exactly the most organized person. And she points around at the shelves.
We've had to deal with libraries, big and small. We've had to go through rubble. We've had to go through caverns. We've had to go through the catacombs of Paris.
My goodness, it sounds like you've had quite an adventure.
Yeah, right. I smile to the group in the probably the biggest smile that they've seen. And I say, yes, we have been on quite an adventure. And our adventure has led us here to find this next piece of the puzzle, so to speak. It has no real monetary value. We don't imagine it the way it does, but it has significant cultural. It has significant cultural. My God, a word. I turn to Dr. Keith and I say, it "Has significant cultural what?"
There's the
current
humming noise.
Say that again.
Currency. Cultural currency.
Yeah, sure. Cultural currency and a truly impactful historical relevance in the Byzantine Empire. So we're trying to put these pieces together for the museum in Constantinople.
Okay. Do a psychology roll for me.
Do a psychology roll. Well, guess what, Tom? It's a 50. So I got a 50% chance, and I got a 13.
Okay. Your expert psychology in this case looks at her and realizes that she doesn't understand a word of what you're talking about.
That's good. That's a good thing. It's good. No, it's good. Because
she's got that sort of smile on her face as she's staring at you like, he's just going to keep talking.
It's good because it means that she's not evil. If she has no interest in what I'm talking about, it means that we can rule her out.
She says, well, please, you know, look around. Grandma will be here soon. I'll just, you know, tidy up over here and that. And she goes back to her humming and she goes, you know, tidying the kettle and everything and making sure everything is nice. what would you guys like to do? Okay, so you're here, and she's giving you permission to sort of look around.
So we begin to look.
Okay. I'll have everybody do a spot hidden.
By the way, did the other humming go away?
Well, you were never quite sure that you heard anything at all. Every time you tried to notice it, it sort of faded away.
I got 28, and
I didn't pass.
Rupert gets a 3.
Well, as you curl, Rupert's like, is this it? And he holds up an arm. Is this it? He's the one who saw the other arm. He takes one of the arms and he goes over to Eldridge and suddenly swings it up close to his face and he says, does this look like it's it?
And I look at him and in English I say, Rupert, we're looking for a obsidian purplish arm with symbols. You're holding a piece of marble. Go look for the purple obsidian arm.
So
I look at Keith, that's the thing.
Yeah, I look at Keith and I say, you know, drinking much? And then I pull up my little flask.
Now,
he's enthusiastic.
Dr. Keith, you are dumbfounded by the array of little artifacts, bits and pieces of what must have come from dozens of eras, some of them predating the Romans. All of them, of course, things that you would find at an archaeological dig, you know. You wouldn't find them all in the same archaeological dig. So there must be churches and temples and things out here in the woods that have been long since forgotten. And you're surprised because you're kind of in the deep woods. What would be out here? Why would there be anything out there? Could there have been settlements out here, but eventually the roads to them just sort of got forgotten? Nobody came out here anymore or something like that. But obviously she's found a treasure trove of some amazing things out here. Many that you can place the period, but you can't place the artist. That comes from maybe some that even belong to an entirely different school of art, but definitely Roman or Byzantine, Greek.
How very unusual. I shall share this observation with the others. I'm going to continue perusing. I mean, we're obviously looking for part of the simulacrum, but, you know, I'll keep an eye out in case anything else jumps out of me as well. I mean, it's a bit of a treasure trove, isn't it?
Well, I know that we're looking for statues, but would there happen to be any sort of like scrolls or?
No, they're all pieces, various pieces of hewn rock, a few pieces of pottery, but mostly pieces of marble, pieces of stone that have been carved, bits and pieces of statuary. You probably find a few of those little doll-like things that that you saw at the mayor's house. But once again, nothing is really, I mean, there's literally piles of things on shelves. You realize that if the arm was here, it could be buried under things. And anyways, about this time, you've been there maybe half an hour. And you hear a noise. And it's almost, it's kind of a rustling, flapping sort of noise, which is very odd. Maybe like the sound of an umbrella, you know, when you sort of shake it and close it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can hear a tap, tap, tap coming from just outside as the door swings open and an old woman, looks like she might be in her 80s, steps through the door. She's hunched over from what looks like, doctor, you probably think it's probably osteoporosis, not uncommon in old folks. She has a cane, and she has a sort of canvas bag slung over her shoulder, and as she steps inside, Tirza, she sort of stands up and she says, "Grandmother, we have visitors." And she looks up at you and she smiles, and it looks like she's got maybe 4 or 5 teeth left, and they're kind of icky brown. And but she smiles. She's got an old wrinkled up face. And she says, "Oh, good, good. Please, have you eaten? Have you drank?" As she's putting her little bag over on the table. It sounds like there's rock or something inside of it, probably more pieces that she's found. And she's like, greetings, please. Why are you here? Are you here because of, you want to buy something?
First off, ma'am, and I hold out the mead, and I bow my head in reverence, and I say, "This is a gift from us to you for allowing us to even be in your home."
"Oh, that's very sweet of you. Please, Tirza, take this." She takes it. And she says, "But please, that's very kind. You've come a long way, yes?"
"We're researchers from Miskatonic University in Massachusetts, America."
"Oh, yes, I believe I've heard of that, yes."
"My two partners over here are professors who are studying the cultural impact of the Roman and Byzantine Empire within this region. My other partner, my associate, Frank Coates, is a photographer, and I'm the translator and ghostwriter. We're looking for a very specific artifact."
Please, yes. I might be able to help you. Something that something beautiful, decorative?
Actually, it is rather beautiful, in my opinion. What it is it's an arm. It's made of what looks like this purple obsidian, but it could just be some kind of ceramic. It's got symbols all up and down the arm. And it seems to shift color as you shine it in the light, much like oil or obsidian if you have a certain sheen on it.
Well, that sounds very strange, but vaguely familiar. Like, I've collected so many pieces, and marble comes in so many different colors, and I've seen so many different arms.
Tell me, for curiosity's sake, have you felt a pain in your arm?
A pain in my arm? Well, at my age, I feel pain all over.
This would be a pain that grows and grows over time. Hmm. And it's not an arthritic pain, something that you may be quite used to, but it's almost a stabbing pain all throughout your arm, almost like you're having a heart attack.
No, I don't think so. Not any more than usual. I am an old woman.
I nod, and I
She sort of has taken a seat in a chair, and she sits there, and she's got her cane, you know, like this.
Would it be possible for my associates to approach and possibly ask you questions while I translate?
Of course.
And I step to the side, and I put my hands behind my back, and I kind of shake my head nudge my head to kind of allow someone forward before the matriarch of the house.
Silence. Oh, yeah, well, sorry. we're still working through you as translator, though, aren't we?
Yes.
How do you do? What a lovely collection of things you have here.
Oh, thank you. And did I understand him that you're a professor at the university?
Yes, I'm a historian and something of an archaeologist as well.
Oh, how wonderful. She says, I studied at Sofia in Bulgaria for many years. My father was a professor there.
Oh, extraordinary. And your father was also an archaeologist,
yes. I followed him around all over the world. I became very, very interested. Even when I was a young girl, I started a collection. And I became very, very adept at it. I think that I could probably give any archaeologist a run for his money.
Well, have you ever considered writing about any of your discoveries?
Oh, no, I don't have time for that. I like my peace and my quiet out here in the woods.
It is rather lovely out here, yes. So these are all things that you found in the local area, are they?
Most of them, yes. Some of them on my earlier travels when I was younger. But most of them, some of them have sentimental value. Some of them are like old friends. Of course, I'll sell my old friends if you really like them very much.
I'm spoiled for choice. It's a marvelous collection.
So let's see. You're looking for an arm. An arm with a deep, dark, you said obsidian or purplish color.
Yes, rather a strange patina.
My goodness. And she starts looking around. She says, perhaps up there, and she sort of points up to the one of these higher cabinets. She says, it's possible that it might be up there. But quite honestly, it could be easily up there. I'm afraid I'm not very organized.
Can I take a moment outside of the game real quick?
Sure.
Who wants to touch it first?
I've been thinking about that because I think the way it stands at the moment is that I'm the only one of us who isn't experiencing symptoms of having touched a part of the simulacrum, so I think it's kind of my turn.
She's like, can you give me more to go on? What period does this arm come from? What sort of statue was it attached to?
Well, we think it's an image of a man from...
Clothed or unclothed?
Unclothed.
From around, would we say, around 1100?
I'd say even, it probably predates that.
Hmm. From the first millennium, certainly.
And in a dark, dark color.
It is life size. It is the normal size of a human arm.
Life size. Any particular pose that it's in?
I believe that the arm is crooked, but that's only from what we've seen so far. Now, I should say that this arm is very specifically interesting because it seems as if in the light that the symbols move and that whoever holds it, this arm, it appears as the wearer's arm. Almost as like an optical illusion.
She's like, that's very strange. What is it made out of?
There's no way to know. That's half the reason we're taking it to Constantinople for research and study, and then possibly to be restored.
And have you found any pieces of this?
I turn to the group. I don't think she can understand English, so I say, do we want to show her the piece we have?
If she's educated and well-traveled, she might speak English.
Okay, so I just say, do we show her? I don't think why not. Okay. So
we've brought it here, so.
So, Dawkins, if you'd like to approach her with it.
So, yeah, I'll take out the piece.
All right. When you take it out and she sees it, she's like, oh, my. Oh, my. And you put it in front of her? Or...
Yeah, or lay it on a table or something like that. But as she's saying, like, oh, my, I want to look to see what sort of expression that she has on her face.
Well, her face is very, very expressive. Got a lot of wrinkles, a lot of muscles, a lot of warts and moles and things like that. So go ahead and do a psychology roll, and I'll even give you a bonus dice on that one.
So what you're saying, Tom, is that she's very beautiful, and you're surprised that none of us have fallen in love with her.
Okay.
Nope. I got a 30 out of 10. So. Yeah.
Well, you don't get any deep reading on her, but she seems genuinely surprised when she looks at it and intrigued.
As you can see, ma'am, the piece is very unique. The symbols have been predated to almost 2,000, maybe 3,000 years ago.
My goodness. She says, but there is something vaguely familiar about it.
What you should have, ma'am, is the right arm.
I see.
What we believe you have is the right arm.
She says, do you have any kind of provenance? Where did it come from? Where did you find it?
Specifically,
anything that sort of give me an idea of where it originates.
We can't give you the details on where we found this piece, but what we can tell you is that the piece originated in Constantinople.
Constantinople, but it's not Byzantine.
No. As I said to you earlier, ma'am, we believe that it predates the empire by a significant amount of years.
Hmm, my goodness. I think there's a good chance that I have what you're looking for. And I'm thinking that it's somewhere up here. Are there any legends attached to this arm, to this statue that you're looking for? It seems to me there's something that I read once a long time ago.
There is, but what use are legends? Legend simply says that it could have been armor.
That's armor. It. No, I don't think that's it. Does it have a name? Is it a particular famous piece that you're looking for?
I'm going to turn to Dr. Keith.
Like, why does it seem like? Like, I vaguely remember something.
And I'm going to give, like, this, like, look of, like, do we tell her this shit?
I'm going to throw you a look that says, no.
No, don't, okay.
No, because out of the game for a moment, If she's as interested in archaeology as she claims to be, I mean, the very last thing we want to do is let her know that this is like some sort of priceless, irreplaceable artifact. I think it's going to quickly get out of our price range.
Yeah. Elector and I say, there is a possibility that there is a legend behind it. After all, there are legends behind Michelangelo's paintings and, of course, the Statue of David. But we don't really know, or rather care about the legend surrounding the piece. We simply wish to see it restored and then dated and then procured by the museum. And, of course, the museum would probably be more than happy, once they evaluate the entire structure, to send you an invoice that gives you a nominal fee.
I see. Well, let's see if we can find it. And she looks around with sort of a glance around, and she says, "This could take a while. You'll stay for dinner?"
I don't see why not. It would be impolite not to.
Excellent. And she says, "You know, Tirza, you know, get to work on dinner, and we're going to be looking for this thing." Now she says, "I won't be able to climb up there with you, but please, you know, be careful." She says, "I think it might be up in this area over here." So would one of you guys like to climb up and see if you can find it?
Dr. Keith.
Like I say, Dr. Keith is a bit large.
Yeah, I've got...
Maybe Rupert.
I've got maybe rather Rupert. Low dexterity. Well, Rupert has...
The injury, yeah.
He has an injury to one leg, and the simulacrum has caused damage to the other leg.
All right, so
he's not... I've got
dexterity, so I can at least look up there. I won't be grabbing anything, but I'll look.
I'm afraid if you ask Rupert, he'd be like, "Yeah, right. You always are choosing me to do the hard work, to stick my hands in the muck, to."
I don't think it's fair to send the chat with a cane,
no,
a ladder, or something.
So I'll remove my trench coat, then I will remove my suit coat. And I'll unbutton my vest, lean them all on a chair, and then I will nimbly climb up and look on the shelf.
Okay. As Eldridge is climbing up on the shelf, Tirza is getting ready to make something. She's got a big cast iron pan that she's heating up in the oven. She's pulled out the extra bread. She's humming her little tune. She's making sure all the crumbs go into the dustbin or whatever. Grandma has stood up, and she's got her cane to steady her as she's looking up into the rafters. And Eldridge is climbing up. And she's like, there, towards the left, I think, you know, almost in the thatch, I've piled so much stuff up there that it just keeps going and going. What would any of the rest of you like to do?
What's the old woman doing as he's going up there?
She's just
pointing.
She's standing there sort of directing him where she thinks it might be. As best she can look up because she's all hunched over.
I'll just stand there and watch her.
Okay. So Eldridge, you sort of look up there. You can see that there's arms and things sticking out. There's a few pieces of look like almost black granite that you find that sort of caught your eye at first, but they don't turn out to be it. Go ahead and do a spot hidden for me, Eldridge.
Oh, boy. That's my best skill. And I got a 60.
Is that so a pass?
Yeah, that's a pass.
Out of the corner of your eye, you think that you see movement. Almost as if something, maybe one of the pieces, moved. Could there be rats or mice or something up here? Or was it a piece of the thatched roof that moved? You're not sure, but when you look, there's nothing there. There's nothing moving. Grandma sort of says, "There it is," and she points over, and there's a place where you can sort of move over to the edge of the cabinet. You'll have to lean a little bit out, but you can see something distinctly purplish. It's jammed in the back, and it's half in the rafters, but it's there. And the way that it sort of gleams in the light might be it. Good candidate. Definitely looks familiar, the color.
All right. So I'm going to get down, and I'm going to approach Dr. Keith and say, "Well, you know what you have to do. You need to kind of take one for the team here."
I'm not sure I understand the idiom.
You need to be the first one to touch it.
Oh, yes, of course, yes. Right, okay, well, I'll see if I can hoist myself up and...
Do be careful, dear.
I'll assist as best I can.
As will I.
If someone could hold this steady while I get up there. And I shall reach for the arm in question.
All right. Well, you have to climb up on a chair and then up on the cabinet, and you have to sort of steady yourself as you're on the up on the top of the cabinet. And you have to sort of lean out a little bit, and you have to reach. I'd like you to do a dexterity roll.
Oh, dear. 35 out of 40. I actually did it.
There was no water involved.
Yes. if it's a dodge, then I'm doomed. For the dex, actually made a dex.
All right. Here we go.
I don't like that expression on your face.
Just as you reach for the arm, and as you're getting close to it, you're 99% sure that's the arm. You are almost dead sure that out of the corner of your eye, you can see movement. And just as you grasp a hold of the arm, you suddenly become aware that two or three of these other pieces of porcelain, and not porcelain, marble around you are starting to move. And in fact, one of them, which is also an arm, grabs a hold of your arm as your arm is holding a hold of the simulacrum.
What?
Now I want to know where everybody is sort of standing. So let's go around the room. Let's start with Dr. Elizabeth. She's on the cabinet here. Okay. here's Grandma. Here's
I've got my left arm up that I'm grabbing it with because I didn't want to grab it with my good arm.
Okay. So who's between Grandma and the stove, let's say?
Well, me and Frank are literally behind Elizabeth.
Okay.
Preparing
don't
do to
that when you don't make that gesture when you're doing it.
I'm gonna catch one. I'm gonna catch one cheek, and Frank's gonna catch the other.
Keep your hands to yourself.
You're not quite touching anything, but
all right. So we'll say Rupert is there. Then there's the oven. Then there's Cersei. Then there's the rest of you, okay, sort of around behind Elizabeth. All right. Elizabeth, you notice immediately that these arms and things are reaching for you. At the same time, you realize that they're not really arms at all. There's something else. Rupert, standing next to the oven, suddenly yelps and jumps back. And as he does, Cersei has turned around with the butcher knife and she has literally swung it right at Rupert. And he's managed just barely get out of the way. At the same time, the rest of you realize that something is happening inside this hut. The whole hut seems to be transforming into something, and the stove is becoming a gigantic belching sort of mouth.
I knew it.
The stories were right, weren't they?
The signs were all there. I was like, hey, the young girl seems a little bit like bait.
Like
Nanny was right.
Like lightning, grandmother straightens herself up, reaches over and grabs a large peel, like for putting the bread in, and very swiftly slips it right underneath Dr. Elizabeth's feet and begins to lift her right off the cabinet and looks like she's going to fling her right into the oven, or rather the mouth.
Am I still holding the arm?
Yes. And you can now see that the arms and things are not arms at all. They're almost tentacles.
Oh.
Do you want us to give Dex so that way we can begin combat? No. Because all this is happening, I'm like...
Yeah, well, let's go ahead and get you in order. Who's got the highest dex, lowest dex?
Can I try and make a jump?
My dex is at a 50.
My dex is 40.
Sixty for me.
And Rupert's is also 40.
So you got Frank first. What did you get, Thomas?
I'm a 70.
Okay. Thomas is first. Eldridge is first. Perhaps because he had some inkling that something was going wrong. Followed by, followed by Dawkins, and then followed by Elizabeth, and then Rupert, just because Rupert's already made a move. He's jumped back. All right, Eldridge, what are you going to do as this starts to unfold? This is just literally 1 second at a time. And you're muted.
I am. Well, while I eat my spinach, as Eldritch eats his spinach with one hand, I'm gonna definitely pull my. Well, actually, I don't have a pistol. Fuck. Okay. I'm Eldritch. Eldritch doesn't use pistols. So what I'm gonna do with them is I'm gonna charge at the old lady, and I'm just gonna line back, just bull rush, just push her, you know, onto the ground.
Okay. Go ahead and roll for what is it? Grapple? Not grapple.
Brawl.
Brawl.
Yeah. I got a 9.
All right. You run forward to hit her, and you slam into her with pretty much force as you can muster. And it's kind of like hitting a stone wall. Okay. She swings one arm back at you and just shoves you across the room. This old woman is way stronger. And as this is happening, Eldridge, an old story runs instantly through your mind. Can you guess which one it is?
Yeah, I have a nagging suspicion as to which one it is.
Does well, it involve chicken legs?
You've been calling her grandmother all this time. I said it in English because nobody ever said anything else, but grandmother in Russian is Yaga. Baba.
Yeah.
Baba Yaga.
Baba Yaga.
So
you did send me that on purpose.
A long, long time.
You sent me that and you're like, it has nothing to do with anything. Ignore it.
Just flavor. All right.
Rudy's like, oh, it's just flavor.
So that's what happens to you. Frank, what are you going to do?
First of all, I'm stunned that she was able to lift Dr. Keith with the peel.
Yeah.
So, and then when I see her smack Eldritch away like he was a fly, my first concern is to see if I could help Dr. Keith to get down off the peel somehow.
Okay. It looks like she said she was going to try to jump. So it looks like she's about to jump. You going to try to catch her?
Catch, assist. I'm not sure what the right word is.
Deflect.
Well, let's go ahead and jump then to, let's jump over to Dawkins and we'll do yours when we do Dr. Elizabeth's.
Well, Cersei, or whatever her name is, since she tried to stab Rupert, I'm going to unsheath my sword cane, and I'm going to try to disarm her.
Okay.
Quite literally.
Okay.
And that is a no.
She got a 5. So...
And I got a 71, so...
When you swing at her, she deftly steps out of the way and then comes back with her knife and connects with your shirt. Okay, but she doesn't cut you. All right, Frank and Dr. Elizabeth. Dr. Elizabeth, were you going to try to jump down?
I'm going to try to jump down.
Okay, go ahead and do a dexterity roll.
Okay.
Because she's literally flipping you towards the...
Right, I got 41 and my dexterity is 40. Are we in combat, though?
You're in combat.
So I can't spend a luck point, so I failed.
Okay. Would
me helping her give her a bonus die?
No, because you were just sort of ready to keep her from cracking into the floor as she jumps.
Okay.
Baba flips the peel and starts flinging you towards the stove, which is now a gigantic mouth. And we'll get back to you in a second. So, Frank, you can do something else if you want.
Can I grab her to prevent her from being flung?
Try grapple.
I've got Rupert to do as well.
Nope, 42 out of 25.
Okay, you reach, but she's already flying through the air. And Rupert is between you and the stove, so there's a chance that Rupert can try and jump in the way or stop you in some way.
I'm going to say then that Rupert is just going to try and just sort of push me off the peel.
Okay.
Because there's not really much time. I mean, it's, you know, it'll have to be quite instinctive, and there's not much time to plan something. So he pretty much just try and barge me off, I think.
So he's trying to, we'll say he's trying to deflect you.
Yes.
Okay.
So just a brawl then?
Yeah. And if he gets a critical fail, he's going to get knocked into the
thing. Oh, boy.
Uh-oh.
No pressure.
His brawl is 55. Come on, Dice, do your stuff. Oh, 14.
Okay, so he manages to knock you out of the way.
Well done, that man.
So, you now hear.
Do I take any damage from that?
Yeah, probably. Let's see. Yeah, you're going to take some damage. Go ahead and do, 1d2 hit points of damage as you stumble to the floor. It's pandemonium at this point. You all notice that Tsurtsa, as she's swinging her butcher knife, is singing some sort of little chant. I'm not even going to try, but everybody do their Cthulhu Mythos roll. I know you don't have much, but...
77.
Tom?
Yeah?
I don't know what's going on. But nope. The dice, they're working.
Nope.
Cool. What'd you get?
4.
Okay.
So those are elder dice.
Yeah, it's the older son dice.
The language that she's speaking, let me do it this way. Dawkins, do a intelligence roll.
I got an 07.
Okay. You don't know what she's saying, but it sounds the same as what you could hear in the house of Father Filipovich's house, off in the distance. It's that same, got the same sort of cadence. Eldridge, what you hear is gibberish, except that you recognize Shub-Niggurath in the middle of what she's saying. Ya, ya, Shub-Niggurath.
I shout, goddamn town's cultists.
She in turn is going to swing her butcher knife at Frank.
Is this the old woman or
she's singing her little horrifying tune and swinging her butcher knife, and she got a 3.
Did we determine? So I normally would have a revolver. Did we determine we didn't have weapons out here?
Did you guys have any reason to bring your weapons out here?
At this point, Frank always carries his revolver, but I just couldn't remember if we said for some reason or other we had to leave him back. I don't remember doing that, but just wanted to check.
Well, I think you probably do have it, but you didn't have it readied.
So. Right, yes. Yeah, I just wanted to make sure. So on this one, I guess I'm going to try to dodge.
Okay. She got a 3.
Yeah, that's a fail.
All right. She does 1d4 of damage to you.
Do you want me to roll or do you want to roll?
You go ahead.
D4?
Eldridge, what were you going to say to me?
I'm wondering if, as a free action, I'm going to use D&D logic. As a free action, I can shout the flute.
Okay.
So I shout the flute. The blow the flute.
Whose turn is it? That's a free action. So what else are you going to do?
Well, it's not my turn, I don't think.
Whose turn? Let's see. Frank. Actually, it's Baba Yaga's turn. So she is going to swing the peel that she's holding and try to hit one of you. Let's say she tries to hit Dr. Dawkins with it.
All right, I'm going to try to dodge. And no, I do not dodge.
Well, she's got a 46.
And I have an 80.
Let's say she smacks you with it and it knocks you against the wall. It only does 1 point of damage, though. I think we're back to Eldritch.
Cool. Give me a kind of give me an idea of my surroundings. So we're in the kitchen. What has all come to life?
Everything. It would seem that you had been previously under some kind of a perception spell, if you were going to couch it in those words. You are now inside the body of a creature. And there are mouths and tentacles all around you, and one big, enormous mouth that they're trying to shove you into.
Yeah.
You think the entire hut itself is a creature.
Okay.
Is a living creature.
Is there... are there utensils? Is there a cleaver? Is there a knife? Is there anything that I can use as an improvisational weapon?
I'll say that anything that you would find in a kitchen, you can still find there.
Okay. So I'm going to grab a knife. A knife is, I think it's 1d4. I want to say that's correct. Let me look. Cthulhu knife. The thing I'm seeing is saying it is 1d4. Call okay. Yep.
If it's a medium knife, it's 1d4 plus 2 plus damage bonus.
Yeah, right. that's what I'm saying. Butcher knife is 1d6. So I'll just say it's a medium knife. It's like a steak knife.
All right.
So I'm gonna take this and I'm going to. If nothing else, my dodge is like really high. It's a 50. So I'm going to slash at Thursa, the girl with the Chanta.
Okay. Go ahead.
33. That is almost a hard. Almost.
Okay. You beat her roll. So you're going to connect.
Awesome. And that is 4 plus 2, that's 6. Okay. That is a mighty cleave.
Right, you hit her good. And surprisingly, she bleeds and screams a little, but then goes back to her chanting and swinging her butcher knife. So, Frank.
Oops, I'm trying to remember what happened to me last. Baba Yaga, swung.
She swung her peel and hit you with it, and it knocked you.
Was that me or was that Dr. Dawkins?
Oh, it was Dr. Dawkins. What did happen to you last?
That's what I was trying to remember. Because I was trying to help.
Oh, you were trying to get your gun out.
Right, right, right.
All right. So you've managed to get your gun out.
Okay. I don't know why I'm hesitating. Something about shooting an old woman and a younger woman. Well, the younger woman has a knife, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to try to shoot her.
Okay. Ooh.
Nope, 87 fail.
Okay. She got a 77, so nothing happens. The bullet goes off and it hits the wall, but nothing happens.
Okay.
Whatever the wall is. The wall's no longer a wall. The wall is like the inside of a stomach.
Yeah, that's what I remember. Just a tiny bit of Baba Yaga's story that the hut was a living thing.
Dr. Dawkins.
I'm going to try to continue my attack on Zersa.
Okay.
And I got an 11.
Okay. So once again, you connect. Go ahead and do damage.
Oh, that's only 2 points.
Okay. She takes 2 more points. Dr. Elizabeth. You're on the floor. You've fallen. Rupert is almost next to you on the floor. You're both next to the mouth. And Baba Yaga is sort of looming over you.
Right. I'm going to try something which could, I think, turn out to be one of the biggest errors anyone's ever made in this game. Because I think it's just a red herring. And it's not going to do anything. But I would like to blow the ocarina and see if it has any effect at all. Other than someone saying, shut up, that bloody racket.
And how are you going to plug the ocarina?
Ooh.
Well, given that I'm inside a living nightmarish house and a super strong old woman is trying to shovel me into a fire cum gaping maw, I think I'm going to blow it quite hard.
Okay.
Just a moment. I'm probably just going to break a child's toy at this point.
All right. What I would like you to do is do a pow roll.
Pow roll? Not bad on that. 32 out of 60.
Okay. I would like you to do a 1d4 and subtract that from your magic points.
Okay.
And
that's 4.
Okay. You literally have to use every breath that you can. You completely expend it. And as you do, a sound rings out from that whistle, that sort of bizarre discordant harmony. You can feel it vibrate in your chest. Everybody can feel it vibrate. And all hell breaks loose when this happens. You can literally feel the entire building lurch up out of the ground. All vestiges of anything that still remotely looked like a hut are gone. You are inside the stomach or something like that of a creature. Baba Yaga and Cersei both are completely knocked off their feet, as are the others, as are all of you. There are large sort of black pustule things all over the walls that begin to spit out what, for all intents and purposes, looks like digestive fluid, because it burns when it hits your skin. And for a moment, there is nothing but total chaos as you find yourself knocked around the room and you're suddenly spewed out of this thing onto the grass outside in front of the... You're spewed out. Sirtsa is spewed out. Baba Yaga is spewed out. And what you are looking at is, in essence, I guess the clearest picture would be like a baobab tree, if you know what that is. It's a huge, round, fat, incredibly fat trunk with branches up in the air, except that there are huge tentacles. So it looks like five gigantic tentacles waving around, along with smaller tentacles everywhere. There are eyes and mouths all over the outside of this thing, and the whole thing is raised up on what look like two enormous chicken legs, dinosaur legs. They look kind of the same. And you are laying there on the ground. I'd like you to each roll a D4 for damage. And I would like you to roll for sanity at this point.
I may have taken 3 damage, but I'm as cool as a cucumber. I'm house with legs. What's wrong with that? That's normal.
Takes 2.
Well, for you, Eldridge, it seems like this is the stuff of legends. You know exactly what to expect here, almost.
Yeah. Did it say in the story you sent me about the ocarina or a musical instrument? Because I didn't read anything like that.
Nope.
Yeah.
Rupert has made it, and 38, I've made it as well.
All right. Do a 1d4 for damage if you made it. Do a 1d8 if you didn't make it.
3 again.
Rupert does well with 1. And Elizabeth does less well with 3.
Did anybody fail their sanity?
Surprisingly, no.
Okay.
I failed my sanity, but I only took 2 points.
You only took 2. Okay. Couple of things happen now. You see Baba Yaga sort of trying to climb up onto her feet, and she's screaming something at the thing, almost like she's trying to calm it down. And at the same time, it's stumbling side to side. It looks like it's either in pain or it's confused. By the way, the ocarina shattered when you did that.
Okay. Have I still got the arm?
Do a dex roll. We'll see if you still have the arm.
25 out of 40.
So you have managed to keep a grip on the arm amazingly. Yes. Sirtsa looks like she's been seriously injured, broken legs maybe. Okay. You guys are still only maybe 10 feet away from this monstrous writhing thing, and you know that it could, if it stumbled in your direction, it would crush you under its feet. What would you
out of character? Guys, I hope everyone else is thinking this, but I just want to bring it up. Fuck Sursa, like, just get the fuck out of here. Let's just run.
I'd vote very much in favor of legging it.
I mean, I want to help her. Like, I know Eldritch would help her, but, like, Thomas is just like, no.
As far as leaving, the only help she would receive from me is my sword cane through her gullet, basically.
Yeah, so she was slashing at people with a butcher knife. She's complicit.
But we don't really put it out of character. I'm phrasing this for everyone, out of character. We don't know if... Because if you remember correctly, there was a young girl that went missing in the woods. What happens if this is the young girl? She was raised by the Baba Yaga, and then, you know, one thing led to another, and she went insane. It's like Stockholm Syndrome.
Let the people in the village come and sort it out.
Well, actually, I'm pretty sure that the village is a cult. That
the whole village? Kind of
allows, yeah, because they're like, oh, it's the grandma. Go see grandma. She'll help you out.
Well, we were the ones who asked where she was. But I say we just run. I say we run and we run again, and then we run some more.
Tom,
has anyone got a comb that we can throw behind us or something?
How far away is Sursa, and does she still have a knife?
No, she no longer has a knife, and she and Baba Yaga is trying to calm the thing. They are both within 5 feet of that thing. And that thing is dancing around. So approaching them would be incredibly dangerous.
Just run.
I'm leaving.
I'm going to do that. I'm just both Elizabeth and Rupert are just going to get up and just run back the way we came into this clearing.
That's not so easy to figure out, because things have changed. Even the fence that was there is part of this thing. It was far larger. It must have been buried in the ground, most of it. But I'd say that, you know, you just get the hell away. As you are standing there, the bulk of the thing twists and stumbles itself as it's almost dancing on its feet, and you see it crush Baba Yaga. She gets trampled under its feet.
Ding dong.
I kind of want to. I got a high dexterity, so
don't do it.
Don't do it. We're telling you, let's go. Why are we still hanging around here? Why are we still here? We got what we came before.
Frank just tried to shoot her.
What? Sursa can be helped.
Hey, she was the
one that was holding a kitchen knife.
Yeah.
She also appears to be chanting, trying to calm the thing down.
Oh, damn you and your libido, man. Let's just run.
Yep. I don't know why we're discussing this.
Can Rupert try and make a navigation roll?
We'll get to that in a second. So yeah, I assume you're not all here deliberating as to whether you're running or not.
No, I said let's go, and I'm running.
Yep, and Rupert and Elizabeth are running. I mean, Rupert, obviously, two bad legs, in quite a lot of pain. That's not going to stop him. He's still running as fast as he possibly can.
Let us assume that you all run.
Yeah.
Except for Eldritch.
I'm running. I look at her and I look at
them. Let's assume that because of all your hesitation, assume that for a few minutes, for a few seconds you hesitate. And it's probably Rupert who comes running back and grabs you and pulls you along.
Yep.
Come on, man, for God's sake.
but I would like you to do a spot hidden.
Okay, I can do a spot. 37, that's a pass.
Okay. Just as you are crossing the field, heading towards the trees, you're not sure if you're going in the right direction or not, you see something with your eagle eyes. You see Baba Yaga, who's been completely broken by this thing. She reaches out and she grabs a hold of Tsertsa. And within the space of a couple of seconds, you see Tsertsa shrivel up like a desiccated corpse. And Baba Yaga starts to regenerate.
Why we should have saved her.
And that's about the time. Now, you also notice something else. As this creature is writhing around, you can see that there are almost like hair, almost like filaments that are coming off of it and had gone into the ground. They're being extracted from the ground, and as they are, all of the trees, all of the plants, everything around the area is turning black and gray and beginning to crumble. And that's as you run into the woods, you are running into the woods. You are sure within 5 minutes that you have no idea where you're going.
Huzzah.
Keep running. Just keep running.
Well, I think that's where we should end it.
Let's end it there.
All right. Our players included Thomas McKeon, Mick Swan, Simon Ward, Jeff Wilkins, and Wayne Worthy, with myself as the Keeper of the Secrets. We're currently producing 4 shows a week with music and sound effects added in post-production in order to create a richer listener experience. We provide audio-only versions of our shows free for you to download from Podbean or iTunes. Patrons of our show can now enjoy recordings of our pre- and post-game conversations. Some of the funniest and most interesting stuff occurs before and after the show. If you'd like to become a patron, please visit our Patreon account. Just $1 or $2 a month will help us a lot. Like, share, and subscribe to our channel for updates on our latest shows, and leave us some comments. We love hearing from you. This is Tom Rayleigh, together with all the members of our gaming club, inviting you to journey with us once again into the darkness for another adventure into the universe of H.P. Lovecraft and the Call of Cthulhu role-playing game. Until next time, good luck, good gaming. Mm-hmm.